हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 2, Adhikarna 1, Bhakti is all auspicious, removes all sins and their reactions. So that's coming up to Anucheda 129, so the vritti. The next Anucheda illustrates how bhakti leads to the eradication of desires, vasana, which serve as the root of sins. Anucheda 129. Desires, vasana, which cause sin are destroyed by bhakti. Taistanyaghani punyante tapodhana vratadibhihi. Nadharmajam tad dridhayam tad api sangri sevaya. By austerity, charity, and vows, sins are destroyed, but the root of sin is not destroyed. However, by bhakti to the Lord, even the root of sin, namely desire, is destroyed, right? Because with karma and jnana, which means austerity, charity, vows, you're going to have those in both karma and jnana. And so they'll destroy sins. And so when they say they're destroying sins, they're talking about the Parabdha, right? And then but bhakti will destroy all the way down to desire, right? To the root. So now, why does karma and jnana even have that power to destroy sin to, that degree? Is because you have to actually perform the karma and jnana with bhakti. So it's bhakti that's actually doing it. Bhakti is giving the external result, bhakti is destroying the sins. But in karma and jnana, bhakti doesn't give the result of bhakti or moving you towards prema. It doesn't count as a jnata sukriti. It doesn't count as bhakti. Because the thing is nothing else can make it work. Just like we want to be separate from Krishna and do our own thing. But we can't be separate from Krishna because we're being a part and parcel. We can't function without him. So even though we've come to the material world itself is Krishna. It's his Brahman, effulgence. All those qualities then are the basis of what's here. And then, through the transformation of the Kriya Shakti, then you get, the various variety here that's manifested out of the general. You can say it's no, but it's not general. It's I can see the different things. Yeah. They're manifest from the potency that's there that they can be manifest from. Right? In other words, you can only make let's say, a potato preparation out of potatoes. Potatoes are general. Potatoes are the Brahman. It's generic. And then you can take the potatoes and then make them into, so many different preparations, hundreds of preparations, thousands, actually. I used to have a cookbook. It was unfortunately in Polish, but it was 1,001 ways to cook potatoes, right? Because potatoes are quite important for the Poles, right? It means the Irish are famous for that because the Poles are smart. They don't die because there's no potatoes because they always have potatoes. Somehow the Irish died because of no potatoes. And so, yeah, so they become famous about their potatoes, but actually Poles cook way more potatoes, the varieties of potatoes. And the intelligent part is they put a lot of sour cream and all those kind of things on it. So, but somehow or another they make jokes about the Poles and the Irish are, cool. Yeah. So the whole point is that the potatoes being that, you know, just as the example of Brahman, is that it's unmanifest. You know, the qualities are there, the potatoes, but as cooked preparation is nothing. So all the, you know, all the pradhan is there, all the 24 elements are there. Then when they're separated, you know, and then you get the mahat. So now then things are manifest, but that's manifest because of sutra, right? Because of the individual living entity having desire, right? So that vasana. And so from that, then we see as a house is built, or, you know, you plant a tree, or, you know, we can say it all just happens naturally on its own, but there's living entities that need to be trees and birds and grass and butterflies and all that. So all that's manifest, but when it's finished, it just goes back into the earth. It just goes back into the material energy. The air goes back to the air, the water to the water, fire to fire, the earth to the earth, you know, space to space. And so you can't say that it just and then it disappears. So it's based on the Brahman. So the whole point is that that's Krishna. It's not different from Krishna. It's just the impersonal feature of Krishna. But then to control that, then he's come as Paramatma, right? And then as Paramatma, then, you know, in the features of means Mahavishnu, then the blueprint of how creation works is there. And then as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, he then provide, you know, and Mahavishnu is giving all the ingredients and the blueprint. Then Garbhodakshay Vishnu is then giving all the ingredients in this universe. You know, in other words, that part as an expansion of Mahavishnu, then that portion of the greater, the Mahatattva with Karanodakshay, then goes into the universe with Garbhodakshay. But then it's actually specifically managed for each living entity and their situation within it by Kiradakshay Vishnu. So that means everything is Krishna. And the ultimate point is about Krishna's desire that the living entities get purified and come back to him, right? They take up devotion. So we can say, you can say, but there's the material world and there's the spiritual world and never the twain shall meet. But no, there is no twain. It's only Krishna. The twain, you know, is your consciousness. It's Krishna conscious. You see it as all Krishna's kingdom, though inferior energy, but still, you know, it's the reflection, it's the shadow. And so, or the spiritual world is the superior. And that's the only difference. But if we're saying, no, it's different, that still means we still are not seeing it in its connection with Krishna. So the point being made, what we're saying here is the similarity here is that as the material energy is Krishna and it functions by all his energies and that, but we think it's separate. And so therefore, even though it is Krishna, it's working by all his energies, we don't get any credit for being Krishna conscious, right? If we're on the mundane consciousness. So in the same way, karma and jnana, they're still just reflected features of the spiritual world that you see here in all the, you know, with all the energies. And so the point is without bhakti, they don't function. Just like the whole situation is all dependent on Krishna. It's rested. He creates it. He maintains it. He destroys it. So bhakti also is the abhideya. When it says the, it is a capital the. You know, it's not that it's a. No, it is the. All other ones only appear as abhideyas because of their connection with bhakti, right? But because people are an illusion, just as they don't see the material world as Krishna's kingdom, they don't see the actions that they perform here and the levels of consciousness that they are engaging in as connected with bhakti, that their progress in it depends on the application of the bhakti. And they're not functioning is the lack of bhakti. So it's the same thing. So Krishna and his devotional service is that's pervading everything. And so now it's just a matter of if you recognize it or not. If you do, then you move forward in devotional service. If you don't, then you just move forward on the mundane plane. Right? But the point is the austerity, charity, and vows you can only do because of the bhakti, and the destruction of the sin that is there within the karma and jnana is also because of the potency of bhakti. It's not coming from karma and jnana. It's like, you know, this is dead matter. How is this? And I open this and close this. You know, it's dead matter. My hand is dead matter. The air is moving is all dead matter. Why would that get rid of any sin? At the same time as, why would it be sin? Because it's dead matter. You know, a rock falls off of a higher place onto another rock and crushes it into powder. Where's the sin? Right? It only becomes piety or sin because of our consciousness. Right? So the inclusion of the living entity. So then you're including that within there. Then it's still the consciousness. And that's still going to be, that's where that element of bhakti comes. What is the consciousness? What's the intent? How are you applying all this? So we see it's all intimately connected with Krishna. And so you can't get away. So to actually be a materialist, you have to be very determined not to see how Krishna is in everything. You know? Okay. The sinful heart of Adharma Jam Tad Dridayam is not purified. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Nadharma Jam. Yeah, it's not purified. By austerity or charity, it is purified, destroyed by the service of the Lord's feet, right? So means your situation, the situational, as I mentioned before, sin is a situational thing because the Prarabdha is situational. That's the difference what you can see when it's dividing it, because as we see the Acharya, you know, has divided the Bija and Prarabdha into one group and the Kutaj and Aparabdha into a second group. So the point is, bija and prarabdha, those are circumstantial. It means what's going on around you, what you have, up to the point of your gross and subtle body, and that, but it's circumstantial. But kutaj and aparabdha, those aren't. That's dealing with the heart. That's dealing with the mentality of the living entity, right? So therefore, you can't deal with that because you're dealing with the external situations. You've worked in the external situation, like I work here, I apply pressure here, this opens, I get the benefit of doing it, getting that, you know, and I push that, it closes. So it's all circumstantial. But why I'm doing that, that's coming from the heart. And so that's going to define on whether I'm becoming bound because I'm seeing it for my own benefit, whether it's pious or not, or whether it's in karma, jnana or not. It's that I'm being bound because it's not being done for Krishna. And if it's being done for Krishna, then I'm becoming one is the pop is being gotten rid of. The situation is being done, but my consciousness is being purified by the bhakti. And so the point is bhakti is the only one that can deal with the heart. All these other things are all circumstantial. That's why we see Mother Jashoda, she's serving Krishna. It is about the heart. Right? But we see in the material world, it's going on as families are there and they care and all that. But technically it's circumstantial because the living entity is just thinking that that external manifestation there in the material energy is mine and I'm interacting with it and all that. And as long as I see it as mine, it's important. When it's not mine, I don't. But the point being here is that they're only looking at the external. They're looking at the gross and subtle body and around, so it's still circumstantial. Well, Jashoda Mayi, she's looking at, it means her, the living entity, and Krishna, the supreme living entity, and that relationship that's there, you know, that affection. So we see is that the you can't also function here without the spiritual, though if it's not seen as spiritual, and then you don't get the benefit of it being spiritual. Like even in Gyan, you're seeing, okay, I'm the soul, I'm separate from the body, so that aspect is spiritual. But because you don't see it in connection with the Supreme Lord in devotion, you don't get the bhakti element. You only get that Vijnana Maya. You talk about Ananda Maya, that they're on that platform, but they're only on that platform circumstantially. So practically, the pure Vaishnavas won't consider it that way. Yes, you can say it's there. That's like saying the floor is you know, part of the room, But the flora, it just holds things up. It's what's in the room, what you can do with the room. That's the real room. The floor, you don't count as the room. You know, it's everything else that's on the floor. You know, it may be based there, but that's the point, is the spiritual world is also based on Brahman. But there, everybody, you know, is seeing everything in relation to Krishna. So therefore, it takes on the mood of service. So, yeah. So then here, the next one. Aparabdham, aparabdha phalam papam, kutam bijam phalan mukam, kramenaiva palieta, kramenaiva palieta, Vishnu bhakti ratat mana, manam. Aparabdha, kuta, bija, and parabdha karmas are destroyed for those absorbed in Vishnu bhakti, Padma Purana. Okay, so then you're describing here is that all these are destroyed. It means the other one is that they'll only destroy, you know, work within this aspect of bija and parabdha, but they won't deal with kutaj and aparabdha. They can't, because those have to be on the level of consciousness. The other one is just simply, you know, you can say, oh, nobody's very conscious and applying himself very, you know, with intention. And so yes, but he's not seeing it as devotion to the Lord, so he can't actually purify the heart of the jiva. Because him using all that nice focus and all that is just his mind and intelligence and his, you know, polluted consciousness. So it's subtle, but it's not on the platform of dealing with, it doesn't have the spiritual aspect. So then the Acharya continues. Aparabdha refers to karmas other than those to be experienced in this life. Kuta means a karma which will mature into a bija. And a bija will mature into parabdha karma, phalan mukam. Right? So here is parabdha is called phalan mukam in this verse. Right? So you get both. Also, I think in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then it may be quoting this verse also, But then Prabhupada, when he's explaining it, is then using the term phalan mukha. So we see here is parabdha for karmas other than those to be experienced in this life. Anything beyond, right? Next life, you know, whatever it is, like that. Kuta means a karma which will mature into a bija. As you mentioned before, then he was talking about the impressions, the samskars, right? And then that will mature into a bija, right? So a bija means a seed, means you're planting something. You have an interest in, let's say, doing something. So the interest that I have, that this is where this subtlety comes, where you see is that it works. It has this double, you know, you can look at it. We'll look at it. So the seed then becomes, okay, I have a desire to enjoy. That's why I'm looking around anyway to see what I can enjoy, right? And looking around the situation, the circumstances, right? Then I spot something, let's say something to eat, right? And so then I think, okay, now I have the desire to enjoy, right? And then within that enjoyment, then it may have specifics that I like eating, or I like, you know, this or that or whatever it may be. And, you know, that are specific. And it might be a little different than someone else's, you know, circle like that. But it's all within the overall circle. So within the overall, I have some very more specific. And then within that, I have, thumb scars. I have impressions from having worked with that before, either that I'm conscious of from this life or unconscious of that in last life or, you know, previous lives, I've dealt with it and very much appreciated it. And so maybe this life, I don't know about it, but then when it comes up, I become attracted because the super soul, as we were saying before, without him, he reminds you, hey, you know, you used to like this. You know, and so then, you know, when you come across it, then, oh, yes, this is very nice, right? So now all this up to this point is all settled, right? And then we get to the point where now I say, okay, now I'm going to make the endeavor to get that. You know, I see somebody walking by with something to eat, and I'm thinking, yeah, that looks good, and I've had a good impression of that. That was nice and all that, and I'm hungry, and that would work, you know. It's a, you know, it's more of a snack, it's not a meal. And then I look, okay, where is that from? And I look around until I see the spot where it is. Or in your contemporary, you look it up on your phone, even though you could look up and find it right there, but no, you look on the phone like that. And then in the phone, you know, then we'll say, yeah, it's over here. So I'll follow the phone and then I'll bump into the place, even though it's right there. Yeah. But that's another discussion. So then the point is then I make the endeavor. I've already decided. I've committed to. So now that kutaja, that impression turns into a seed. Right? It turns into a seed. And because of that, now that that's become a seed, now I act. As soon as I go, yeah, I want that, how to get it? Now we have a seed. I want it. I'm going to make the endeavor. We have a seed. Now the seed starts to sprout because I look around, I find a place, I make the walk there, you know, like that. I go into the place, I do whatever it is you have to do to get it. Do I stand in the line? Do I have to order it before I get to the counter? You know, because that's so important, you know, like that, you know. And so, you know, or I go up, I pay, I do whatever it is, I wait, I get the thing, you know, and then, you know, it's somehow or another on something, I have to do something to get it into my mouth, you know, unwrap it or pick it up or cut it or, you know, something, some endeavor, I get it in my mouth and then I start, you know, chewing. Then I can, you know, then I'm enjoying, you know, whatever it is, right? So the point is that thing, then that sprouts and that grows until I get the result, right? And so there's going to be that immediate result. I got the thing to eat if I have the karma for it. But there's also going to be the effects of that, that is going to therefore create more samskaras for future, right? And so that's the thing. So that's where it is that the kutaj then is the aspect of the sprout, because from there, but at the same time, it says it means which will mature into a seed, is that I have the karma, I mean, the impression, I'm thinking about it, and I would like to endeavor for it, I'm committed to it, that becomes a seed, it matures into a seed. So in other words, working with the impressions creates the seed that then sprouts. So in one way, you can say kujaj is the sprout, because by contemplating it, the seed is created and sprouts, right? But then I'm going to be working on, because what's going to keep me going through the whole process, because otherwise I'm just dealing with dead matter. It's my impression that this is going to be good. So I go there. And so when I get there and I see that, you know, there's only two people there and the place is nice and it's clean and all that, then, you know, the impression, the happiness that I could see, perceive from the impression is greater than any other circumstantial difficulty, right? And so I continue like that. But when I get there and there's like 50 people standing in line and the place is packed and, you know, you can see is that it's not like really moving through. And then I think about, you know, time, or, you know, last time I was in a line like that, that was terrible, and this and that. So it might be I lose the impression, but I've made that endeavor. So this the seed has already sprouted, and so it's going to wait. But now let's say I'm walking down the street the next day, and I walk past the shop because I don't think about, oh, that place is packed, and that's terrible. But I walk by, and then I see there's only two or three people. There's nobody there. I walk in, right? And it continues. So that's the thing. It's all connected to each other. Then that the aparabdha will be what will be is not experienced in this life, but at the same time is now when we talk about it, remember is that this point, you know, as it's being pointed out in the vritti, is that it's about vasana, about desire, right? It can remove the desire. Desires, vasana, which cause sin, are destroyed by bhakti. So that's being pointed out. And so that means we understand the bija and the prarabdha aren't specifically desire. They're the seed and the growing and all that, but the seed goes back to the impression, goes back to my desire to control and enjoy. And so in the previous verse, it was talking about the aparabdha. One of the acharyas was talking about the aparabdha, meaning that desire to enjoy. So that means that it has these both have subtle aspects and, you know, manifest aspects that we can look at. So depending upon which aspect is coming up in the discussion, that might be made. So that, therefore, sometimes the confusion will come out sometimes. Therefore, the confusion comes up about how these are all working, right? So, because otherwise it's, you know, so the point is you have the mass of acnes. You have 8,400,000 species. Those are all open to the human being. Now that human being, depending upon what has been his interest, you know, in other words, he has the desire to control and enjoy. So there's 8,400,000 species. Within those species, there's a particular circle of situations, routines, actions, results, and experiences that they get. So it will have its variety itself, but still it's based, it's a subset of that 8,400,000. And it will be, you know, governed by the modes, governed by all these different things. So it's all a mechanical thing. So that full, you know, theme that's there on one level, you can say that's a prarabdha. Because that aspect is from where everything is coming up, right? And then within your karma now, and what you've gone through, you have the specifics. So you have the particular things of the vasana. Because if you just say, well, it's no, but only the kutaj, that's the vasana, that's the desires and all that. And the other is just the mechanical, the field. But the point is we came here for that field. So the linga sharir is how I'm going to control and enjoy. Because we see as karma and jnana may remove. That means the karma, you know, just changes and improves the quality of the gross body, you know, by the subtle body being more in goodness and following the rules. The jnana can remove the subtle body also. But, you know, but we see as, and you know, everything's burnt up. But at the same time, as they still want to control and enjoy. The whole idea is I'll be God, that's the biggest controller, and I'll experience Brahmananda, the highest pleasure. So I want to be the controller and enjoyer. So it's not gone. So that means there must be something deeper than just the samskar. You know, just the impression. So that's the aparabdha. Because it's still within that field. You're going to get it next life, but it has to happen in that field, right? You have to have a field. The kutaj is your specific little circle that you move in. And then the bija will be those things that you've planted. And some of those you've done now, you've done something. And that seed is going to sprout now, or it's going to be later, or it might even be in a future life. You know, so the future life is that field of aparabdha. But still, when you get there, it's going to be you're applying your impressions and then working on the continuation of that seed. And once you act on something, it produces another seed because you do that. And that was great. Hey, we should do this again. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's all connected together. Right? So they all go together, but there's a whole basis. So the point being is that bhakti can destroy all the way down to all these four. That means the future, and even if, you know, so the aparabdha can be the field, but can also be the latent ones that you're going to get. Let's say you do some karma in this life, that for 100 lifetimes, you're going to get a reaction. So this lifetime, aparabdha is going to be one. 99 of them, the other 99, that's all aparabdha. Right? But at the same time, that's the gross man of it. But the subtle is that a possibility that it can be there. Just like the scientists don't look at, they can't understand space. But the point is, without space, you have no place to put the earth, water, fire, air. That they know. But the point is, without space, you can't do. And without time, you can't perform action and transform it. So that means there's principles that are behind your action and your results and everything like that. And your, you know, what you're doing and what you're, you know, what you're manifesting is based on time and space. So in the same way as that the upper rabda has to be there. So it has that aspect of the gross that it's going to be okay, the other 99 lifetimes, you know, like that. But at the same time, is then the it also is that field on which all those karmas are situated and have the possibility to arise, depending upon what is your impression. You apply your impression to the field, then you start, then you're going to get the seed, then you're going to get the prarabdha. And that prarabdha may continue in future. So it's still, you know, are we good? So only bhakti can clear all the way down to there, get rid of the linga sharir. You have no interest to control and enjoy the material energy. And so that position, that platform, then you're qualified for the spiritual world because you have no interest here. Right? You see this place also, it's just Krishna's place. It's inferior. It's not, it's less convenient than the spiritual world, you know, like that. But the point being is that they all see it in connection with Krishna as his place. The Vishnu Dutas spoke thus to the Yama Dutas, right? So they're, because the Yama Dutas, they're bringing out the point that, you know, he's a sinful wretch, this Ajamil. And yes, he's doing all this nonsense, but the Vishnu Dutas are pointing out nobody chanted the holy name, you know, offenselessly. So therefore, all that's gone. What you're talking about is gone, right? In other words, yes, it was there. All that nonsense was there. But he, at the time of death, you know, which concerns the Yamadutas, right? It means they can't just come and collect them anytime they like. Only at the time of death, when his stipulated time of death is there, then they can come and they can collect him. But he's pointing out at that time he chanted the Lord's name. And so all that is gone. So what you're coming to collect him, because they're coming, Yamadutas are coming, and they have basically, you know, two forms that they come as. One is they just come, you know, as is, you know, just this, you know, wild looking like that. And they come with their three-headed dogs. And those three-headed dogs are, you know, also have that same, you know, au naturel kind of, you know, element that they're there to create and that make trouble, right? And so they come there, they're scary, they drag you out, they, you know, they take you to whatever it is, how they're going to transport you or make you walk or whatever it is. And so it's not good, but if it's night, then they're going to behave nicely, you know, maybe they'll, you know, comb their hair, I don't know. But whatever it is, and the dogs will then act as guard dogs to make sure no one else bothers you. You're going to meet Yamaraj, you're a pious person, you're headed to the heavenly planets, you know, so in the material world, you're glorious. So remember, we're talking about Petri Loka. Who's on Petri Loka? Petri Loka are all the pious people, right? Maybe they haven't done something big, like a, you know, Rajasuya to go to the heavenly planets on, you know, some big level, but it's part of the heavenly scene. It's connected with the moon. And so it's pious people. Now, why are the Yamadutas? We've discussed that before. And the Sringa Purana explains that when the future generations, you know, of these Petris are impious, so they don't do the Petri pujas or the, you know, the offerings to the forefathers, they get nothing to eat, right? Every year the offering's made, so that gives them supplies for 1 year, right? It's subtle, but they get everything for 1 year, right? And so then they can, you know, live comfortably there in Petri Loka, but they don't get, so they get hungry and they get annoyed that, you know, they were pious, they're here, their generations afterwards are not, they're getting disturbed. And so as they get more and more disturbed, they start to look more and more weird until they look like Yamadutas. And then at that time, because they're so desperate, that then Yamaduta engages them as you know, in the position as Yamadutas. You know, they get an official post, you know, so they get a government posting, and they get to share, they get a share in all the pindas that are offered by the pious, you know, descendants to the forefathers. So, you know, in other words, a tax is there, you know, by the Yamaraja's, you know, arrangement, and they're maintained by that tax, you know, so, you know, whatever it is, it's good enough. So what's going to happen? They're going to be very, very disturbed by anyone who's impious, because of their descendants being impious. Now they're in the position they're in. So they have issues. You know, that's the whole point. They have issues. And so this whole thing of, you know, people having issues, that's not just a modern thing. That's a regular thing in the material world. And so the Yamadutas have issues. So they have an attachment to punishing any sinful people, right? They don't do it on their own. They take them to Yamaraj and he tells them what they get. And then they go off and Yamadutas toss you off the top of the mountain, or, you know, put you through a squeezer, you know, whatever it is. They do all that stuff. And so they're comfortable doing that because they know these guys are rat bags. So they're happy because they're pious people by nature. So now they've come, they've caught, Ajamiel, they're going to catch Ajamiel, and the Vishnudutas say, no, you can't. So they're saying he's impious. But they say, no, by chanting the holy name, all that impiety is gone. So you have no jurisdiction. You can only take the sinful, but he's not sinful anymore. He chanted the holy name. Now these guys are pious guys, not devotees. Right? You're on Pitri Loka because you're pious, not because you're a devotee. Maybe it might be, you know, by devotional service and, you know, you have material attachments. So it mentions that you can go to the heavenly planets. It might be Pitri Loka. It might be any of the, you know, heavenly areas. But the point is that you know, here is that these guys are not devotees, because if they were devotees, they wouldn't, their position there is different. And so, not being devotees, they never heard of this. And so when the Vishnudutas tell him, hey, you know, you can't take him, he's saying he's sinful. No, but he's chanted the holy name. And it's kind of, we've never heard of this process. We only know karma and jnana. You know, we practice karma. That's why we're in Pitri Loka. So what is this? So, you know, and the Vishnudutas are more powerful. So even if the Yamadutas wanted to take, they can't. So then they have to leave in frustration. They go to Yamaraj and explain the whole thing. And then the Yamaraj starts explaining to them about the glory of the holy name and devotional service as a Mahajan. He knows that because only a pure devotee, and especially a very mature, experienced pure devotee, could perform the duties of Yamaraj and do things in a balanced way. Like we see the Yamadutas, they're taking part in the, you know, universal governmental activities, but they have issues. Yamaraj can't have issues. He's got to be, he did this, he gets that, you know, or if it's mixed, he's bad and he's good. He's going to get the full amount of his good. At the same time, he's going to get the full amount of his bad. It's not going to be, oh, he's, you know, basically good, so no bad, or no, he's done some bad, no good. No, he has to get equally. Because you see, most people with issues is if they're bad, there's not going to be no good. And if we are sentimental or attached, we say it's good, then we finesse the bad. Right? So here's that, but it's all sentimental. But here he's talking about, no, it's got to be that, you know, what's in devotional service, that's beyond all this karma and all that. So it gets rid of that. So that's the whole point that comes up here, how powerful it is. And Ajamil, you know, the example is used of Ajamil because he was really, really bad. He's, you know, from a high grade Brahmin family, practicing, you know, doing all the duties, married, he has his wife. I don't know if he had children, but at least it mentioned he had his wife. And then when he gets distracted by the process, he just leaves all that and then just leads a sinful life. And so that was as a young man, and especially if it didn't mention children, you know, and he would have been in those days, you know, married, you know, earlier and all that. So then, you know, we're talking here possibly more than 50 years, that he's just been a nonsense, you know? And so then, you know, most people who have an affinity or an attachment to mundane morality and piety, they'll write off any good that someone does, you know, like that, if they've done something wrong. And so you see is you get people, you know, on a crusade about something. And so that's the whole thing, is that's where the, you know, the modern identity politics and that comes up, is because they're in a category. They're not an individual, right? But Krishna, in being in the heart of every living entity, is Paramatma. He's seeing the individual, and they're working by their action according to, yes, of a specific identity, right? Because you can't act unless you have an identity. And so then, you know, he's going to judge it like that, just like that's why Yamaraj has to be such a, you know, a great devotee, a Mahajana, to be able to judge like that. You know, he has to be beyond all this. So, yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah. So the basic point then is going to be is that bhakti removes all the things, and then you have to deal with them on that point, because we see it even had, even it was arranged that he didn't even have to leave the body. In the same body, then he went, I think, to maybe it was Haridwar, unless that was the next life, but he went to some place, to a temple, because he was a Brahmin. You know, by his background, he practiced, he was a practicing Brahmin and had been, you know, well situated, well trained. And so he just went to a temple and just stayed there, you know, because he's 80 years old, right? You know, or 88, I think, maybe, you know. So he just goes there, and then it mentions that then from having been purified, then he became situated, the anartha nivritti was then crossed, and he became situated in nishta, and from that he became, you know, steady in his service, he developed taste, developed attachment, and like this, then he progressed. So we can see is that it's also going to say, okay, but yeah, but, you know, he did that, you know, once he had, I say, the famous aphorism to have an excuse to give up all Vaishnava etiquette. No, but he did that after joining. If he did that before joining, or if he just left, you know, then it would work. But no, you know, he was already Krishna conscious, and then he, you know, practicing, and he did all this nonsense. So, no, it's that it carries on. So therefore, the same body, because you have, like in the Hindu thing, okay, yeah, you're Shudra, Chandala, this life, you do your devotion and all that, you'll never come to our platform of social status and all that. We understand, yes, it is a purifying process, you know, because you can't use the high-grade process that we do of Vedic yajnas and all that. And in your next life, then you'll have the piety to take birth as a Brahmin, right? Because the eggs is all on the bodily platform, right? Mundane morality is bodily consciousness. 100%. That's all it's dealing with. It's not dealing with something else. Only Vijnanamoya is dealing with the soul, right? Ananda, I mean, Manamoya, you know that you're the soul and not the body. That's why I can work this life and be pious for next life to go to the heavenly planets. And I want a heavenly body. I don't want to go in this body, right? Because you can't take this body to the heavenly planets. So that's what's special about the Pandavas. Even you say, okay, they went to the heavenly planet. They went in the same body. That means they were already on that platform. And because we know as devotees, they're beyond that platform, right? They're beyond that platform. So therefore, then you know, if the Vijnanamoya, there's the idea that I'm the soul, not the body. So there you can say is the spiritual, actual spiritual consciousness is a reality that you're dealing, that's your main focus. Below that, Dharma, Artha, Kama, you're going to be dealing with, you know, what your gross and subtle body is going to benefit from. I do the things, Dharma, I get the Artha, and then I can enjoy Kama. You know, whether it's here, whether it's in the future, or whether it's in the heavenly planets, it doesn't matter. It's bodily conscious. It should be understood. It's not because it's pious, yes, it's more glorious than impiety. But as far as comparing it to spirituality, it doesn't even compare. right? That's the whole point. It's simply a reflection, because even the Vijnanamaya is a higher level. That's why the stages and all that, you can have the biggest king in the universe, you know, like Uttanapada. He's the king of the universe, not just the earth or the seven islands. All 14, but he's the king. And Dhruva wants a kingdom bigger than that. And so they're listening to the Brahmins. As the kings, they listen to the Brahmins. So that's the whole point. And especially when the sages come and all that, then it's even more, right? So one is they're more pious than the Brahmins are more pious, but the sages then are on that Vijnana mind, right? At least that's the minimum. And then if they're devotees, then they could be on Ananda mind. So we have to see is that this point that's being made here about bhakti removes all sin is an extremely fundamental understanding, and it being the actual Abhideya. Nothing else is actually an Abhideya, because without bhakti it can't work, right? So that's the thing, you know, without electricity is the Abhideya, right? Because when it's put into a machine can function. No electricity, no function, right? So, you know, unless you want to use the toaster as a paperweight, right? So, but even to do that, you can say, I found a loophole. But how do you move the toaster onto your paper, right? You have to, you know, pick it up, use your hands. And how did your arms move, right? The vayu or the wind pushed on the fire. And the fire then pushes on the nerves. And what goes down the nerves? Electricity. So it's not happening without the electricity. So the point is that the bhakti is making it happen. It is the only thing that's happening. In other words, if you don't appreciate that, it's a sad situation for the living entity. The living entity is putting in so much work, so much endeavor, and they could use all that in Krishna's service and devotion, go back to Godhead, and in this life it would be much easier for them. But instead, they're stubbornly sticking to their mundane position. Yeah, we're good. Any questions on that or no comments? How do you say? Comments from the Vaishnav gallery? Like that? No? Okay. Okay, Vriti. Next is... It is asserted that bhakti not only eradicates desires, vasana, but also eliminates the ignorance that gives rise to these desires. Okay, so then here is that ignorance means your forgetfulness of Krishna, right? Your forgetfulness of Krishna, that's ignorance, because Krishna is there. He is everything and we're part and parcel. So to forget that is ignorance. And to identify with the gross and subtle body is ignorance, because we're not, we're the soul, right? Anucheda 130, bhakti destroys ignorance. Quote, when you are 5 years old, by performing pure devotion to the Lord, who is the soul within, unlimited, full of bliss, and endowed with all energies, you gradually cut the strong knot of ignorance concerning I and mine. Okay, so I and mine, that's also, I'm the controller and enjoyer, so I'm the controller's I, and I'll enjoy this as mine, right? Because, yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:11:30. Then Kritanu Yatra Vidyabhir Hari Bhaktir Anutama Avidyam Nirdahatyasu Dava Jvalena Jvaleva Pannagim. Incomparable bhakti quickly destroys ignorance by knowledge which accompanies the bhakti, just as a forest fire destroys a snake. Padma Purana. So incomparable bhakti means you can't compare them. You can't say, well, you know, that's one path. That's one opinion. Yeah, it's one. No, it's incomparable. You can't even compare them. It's like an ant and an elephant. You know, you can't compare. We're talking, you know, whatever we're going to work, we can't compare. So, yeah, Manu spoke thus to Dhruva. Okay, so that's... Okay, so this is the Dhruva Maharaj. And so then we see he conquered over the element of I and mine. And so then that's how then he was able to become the king for the Vaikuntha planet, you know, Swetadri. Yeah. So it has to go all the way to the ignorance. So that's the point, is that you have to get rid of the impressions. You have to get rid of the ignorance. So it just keeps going back like that. Preeti, having highlighted the effectiveness of bhakti in eliminating the adverse effects of both prarabdha and aparabdha karmas, right? Because if you mention both, because prarabdha is what's is manifest, aparabdha is what's not, as possibilities. So prarabdha means it includes bija, and aparabdha means it includes kutaj. So you don't have to every time mention all four, right? You can just say karma, you know, or sin, or like that, as one thing to mean, you know, all four. Or you can just take these main ones. The following two anuchetas illustrate that bhakti fosters the development of positive qualities such as jnana and vairagya, making the devotee beloved by all. Jnana and vairagya. So these are positive qualities that just come along with, right? Anucheta 131. Bhakti pleases everyone, right? So they're saying bhakti pleases everyone, and because it gives the quality. So if somebody's pleased, yes, he's such a nice devotee, it's because of the bhakti. Bhakti is giving those things, right? Now, you can give those because the qualities are there, that they have the inherent nature to act in that capacity. You know, just like, okay, we can talk about how nicely the bird flies, right? We can't talk about how nicely the cat flies. Unless, of course, you're a bunch of yobs on the East End and you caught one by the tail and swung it around and gave it a fling, then they can talk about how nicely it's flying. But it doesn't necessarily end very well. So it's not really a good comparison. It's more of a, you know, sarcastic joke, right? You know, so the point that bhakti pleases is that the soul has the capacity for those 50 qualities by which they can interact with Krishna, because those 50 qualities are the basis of interaction. That's the mutual interaction. You know, Krishna has four extra special qualities in which the aspect of sweetness is manifest in him, and it has the aspect of he's going to interact, and that becomes the attraction. But it's not necessarily the mutual with the devotee. Or he has those other 10 qualities by which those who appreciate the Lord in majesty, then, you know, his godness and how, yeah, great. And that's why we're inspired to worship. So, but they're still going to use the 50 qualities, and Krishna will reciprocate with those 50. Right? Like that. So my point being is that bhakti then imbues the living entity with those qualities that they have the potential for, right? You know, you can't give something that it doesn't have the nature to accommodate. Okay, quote, just as the branches and twigs are satisfied by watering the root, and just as the senses are satisfied by nourishing the life air, by worshiping the Supreme Lord, all worship is accomplished. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31-14. Yeah, so then you're going to the root. So that means the ignorance is actually the root while we're here. Bhakti, by removing the ignorance and the desires, then you're satisfying the Lord. Then everybody is pleased with the devotee, right? So pleasing Krishna, then you're pleasing everyone, because then, because of that bhakti, then those qualities manifest and people notice that. So it means devotees may notice the devotion, but they're also going to see the good qualities that are used for interaction as relationships, right? Because interaction means it's based on those 50 qualities. So then it's going to be, they see how that relates, how that interacts. That's Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31-14. Then Suruchi, quote, Suruchi praised the boy. Suruchi raised the boy up when he fell at her feet. Embracing him, she said with choked voice and tears, "May you live long." Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.46, right? You know, so that means, in other words, he's pleasing, right? And then that's 4.9.46. Then next, just as water flows naturally to a lower level, all living beings naturally offer respect to that person with whom the Lord is pleased because of his qualities and friendliness. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.47. Right? So it's all within this mood, right? Because here, Acharya points out, Suruchi, the stepmother, right? It wasn't his mother, was inimical previously. Dhruva was respected by her because of his worship of the Lord, right? So it means this is after he's come back. Now she's respected. Yenar chito haristena tarpitani jagatyapi rajyanti jantavastatra shangamas svavara api. The universe is satisfied with the person who worships the Lord. All living beings, moving and non-moving, are attracted to that person. Padma Purana. Maitreya spoke thus, right? So, he pleased the Lord. He has all these wonderful qualities. One, the Lord's pleased naturally, then other living entities are pleased. But we see is they develop those qualities by which everybody can relate, right? So the point is the bhakti is doing that. So it's the devotional service that you can say, oh, no, but those qualities are what are attracting. No, but those qualities came from bhakti. In other words, the 50 qualities are the natural field of manifestation of qualities of the devotee because he's performing bhakti. So that means they're inherent in bhakti, right? If Krishna has these 64 qualities, then we see is that his devotion, his Swarup Shakti, then naturally has all the counterparts to all that, all the connections with that, whatever is the one to interact with that. And so the jivas then can have 50 of those. Well, Krishna will have 64, and his Swarup Shakti Radharani will also have those 64, right? But she, her 64, in how they support and serve Krishna in manifesting his 64. Something to say, or? Oh. Okay, I said something wrong. Yeah. So it points out bhakti produces good qualities. So therefore, that's the thing is that bhakti pleases everyone because they see and interact with the good qualities, but they're coming from bhakti. So then they're going to have a specialness that nothing else has. Right. Is that good? Yeah. Okay. So this title, Bhakti Produces Good Qualities, that's just the heading of the Anucheda, or that's like the end
actually,
of the last?
No, Maharaj, that I forgot to remove it. This is put by the editors of the book. Generally, they put this title. Sometimes they match, sometimes they don't match. Always remove it.
Means the editors of the original.
Of Bhanu Maharaj's translation.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. No, it's just this. Yeah. Because, yeah, they just go by then. Yes. Okay. We won't get into that. Anucheda 132, or is the time up? Okay. Bhakti is the cause of good qualities like jnana and vairagya. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarver gunais tatra samasate suraha. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratena sati dhavato bahi. The devatas constantly dwell with all good qualities in that person who has pure bhakti for the Lord. There are no good qualities in the non-devotee who chases after temporary material objects with desire for material pleasure. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Right, so the devatas are also, because the devatas control all the things. You want to move your hand, there's a devata that he takes care of that, you know. So they're all residing there with all good qualities. Otherwise, then, you know, if they're not, then it's manifest with bad qualities. Like that. Okay, so we'll stop for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda. Jai.